ABCD.
This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 23rd of August, 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 23rd of August. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. So the main headlines this week, £90,000 in donations help Lib Dems win, plan process damaging, and county the place for buried treasure. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was the 90,000 in donations to help Lib Dems win. Supporters give cash to election campaign. Winchester's new MP was given almost £90,000 to help his bid to win the seat back for the Liberal Democrats. The recently published Register of Members' Financial Interests revealed that £89,705 was donated to Danny Chambers' campaign. Dr. Chambers won the seat from the Conservatives with a majority of 13,821 at the general election in July. He is the first Lib Dem MP for Winchester since Mark Oaten retired in 2010. The Register of Members' Financial Interests is published for every MP and is publicly available. Donations came from 13 sources, including a huge 43,400 from the estate of Dr. Joan Reed of Alsford. The entry said, £43,400 to win the constituency back for the Lib Dems. Most of the reasons given for donating were to fund the general election campaign, but others included hire of a venue and provision of food and drink for the launch of our fundraising club, and for a public speaking training session. On the donation from Dr. Reed, a spokesperson for the Liberal Democrats said, "This was a generous and thoughtful donation left in a will to the local party. Dr. Joan Reed was a long-standing and much-loved member of the Winchester District Liberal Democrats, including serving as chairman of our Alsford and Itchen Valley branch and volunteer caseworker for Mark Oaten MP. We are incredibly grateful to Dr. Reed for this act of generosity to the Liberal Democrat cause, and she is much missed by all locally." Former Liberal Democrat City Councillor Anne Weir, who donated £2,500, said, "I felt strongly I couldn't leave this election to chance. As a lifelong social and Liberal Democrat, it meant a great deal to me to do all I could to help get our excellent Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate elected this time." Mike Biden donated £2,500. He said, "I was fed up with the sheer incompetence and constant infighting of the last government. The Conservatives seem bedevilled by constant arguments." Dr. Chambers said, "I am humbled and extremely grateful to over 1,000 people who contributed to my campaign over the last 3 years, whether that was delivering leaflets, knocking on doors, making phone calls, putting up posters, helping in our efforts, or donating funds. The Liberal Democrats don't have billionaire donors, but instead we rely on donations, mostly from local members and supporters, to fund everything that we do."
Plan process damaging. A former city councillor has slammed civic chiefs over its local plan process, branding it as tragic and damaging. Patrick Davies made comments as Winchester City Council Cabinet rubber-stamped the next consultation stage of the development plan. The meeting was brought forward by the government announcing new housing targets, meaning the number of homes earmarked for Winchester District per year has gone up from 676 to 1,099, an increase of 423 or 62%. The plan includes development for major sites such as Sir John Moore Barracks and the Bushfield Camp, as well as smaller sites in the southern parishes and market towns. The cabinet meeting lasted 4 hours on Monday. Mr. Davies, a former leader of the Labour group in the City Council, was not happy about how the process had been followed so far. He said, "The risk is we are going to go out to the public consultation with a wholly misleading document for them to comment on. There is no proper reference to the letter you received from the new Secretary of State. I think it's terrible waste of time and resources to embark on this totally fictitious exercise, which is what is being suggested." Excuse me. "It's tragic and damaging to go ahead in the way now suggested. I don't think the Planning Inspectorate will allow this nonsense to go on. You need to reflect carefully on the proper way forward." Andrew Fraser Urquhart, QC, who has advised the council throughout the plan preparation period, said, "It would be wrong to say that we are misleading the public. We are complying with legal and policy obligations." Councillor Leader Martin Todd said, "To describe it as wholly misleading document is complete nonsense. We face an immense challenge. It's taken 3 years to get to this point. The plan sets out a new vision for the development in the district. Our officers have kept going as national policies has changed. I strongly believe that this is the right plan for our district." Other topics discussed included the site for 50 to 60 houses at Brightlands in Sutton Scotney, and has a late inclusion as well as the plan's provision for sporting facilities. The local plan will now go before the full council on Wednesday, August the 28th.
County, the place for buried treasure. Hampshire has been ranked among the best counties in the UK to find buried treasure, according to new research. Casino.org analysed data from the reported treasure finds page on the government website. This was used to find the total reported treasure finds in UK counties between 2012 and 2022. The Treasure Act defines treasure as finds older than 300 years that include coins, prehistoric metallic objects, and artifacts that are at least 10% precious metals, such as gold or silver. According to the analysis from Casino.org, the UK counties which had the most buried treasure finds between 2012 and 2022 were Norfolk, 1,201 cases, Suffolk, 776 cases, Essex, 709 cases, Lincolnshire, 686 cases, Hampshire, 671 cases, Kent, 634, North Yorkshire, 608, Wiltshire and Swindon, 526, Dorset, 425, and Oxfordshire, 417 cases. Treasures that have been uncovered in Hampshire between 2012 and 2022 include a golden ring-shaped item retrieved by Waltham Chase detectorist Jeff Slingsby. This happened back in August 2018, with Slingsby describing the 35mm long brooch as a cracking bit of kit. Alongside that, in 2019, a piece of twisted golden torque from the Bronze Age was discovered in farmland in Swanmore, and a brooch from the 14th century was found in Hursley. What happens if you find buried treasure? Anyone who thinks they've uncovered buried treasure has to let their local coroner know within 2 weeks of the find, so an inquest can be held. Local and national museums are given the chance to purchase any pieces of the coroner rules as treasure. Following the declarations, the finder does not leave empty-handed, as they will be paid a sum depending on the haul's value. And this is accompanied by a photograph of some of the coins, which I think probably some golden and silver coins that have been discovered in Hampshire over the years.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements. Campbell, Peter MacLeod Campbell, died unexpectedly on the 10th of August, aged 80. Dixon, Jennifer Mary Dixon, née Humphreys, died peacefully on the 17th of July at St. Catherine's View Care Home. Garabet, Levon Gregor Garabet, died peacefully on the 9th of August, aged 88. Hayes, Michael George Hayes, died on the 22nd of July, aged 81. Humby, Derek Charnel Humby, died peacefully at home on the 31st of July, aged 93. King, Susan Mary King, died peacefully on the 26th of July, aged 71. Mundy, Valerie Ann Mundy, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 5th of August, aged 81. Samuel, Judith Samuel, died peacefully at home on the 25th of July, aged 88. And Thistlewhite, Margaret Edna Thistlewhite, née Bomber, died at Basingstoke Hospital on the 16th of July. And now, Andrew, you've got Christian comment, please.
And this week's Christian comment is written by Sim Dendy of the Freedom Church, Romsey, and it's entitled, God's Opportunity to Be More Patient. Love is patient, says the heavily used Bible passage read at weddings. Well, if that is the case, then maybe I am not very loving, as I definitely lack patience. Please don't judge me. But I am that person that doesn't like to queue. I always try and join the shortest one in the supermarket and watch how the other queues progress to see if I have chosen well. If the traffic slows down on a dual carriageway because it's converging into one lane, I will happily use the empty lane until the last minute. This is one of my family's pet hates. It is so embarrassing, they say, as they drop down in their seats, while I remind them that it is fully recommended by the AA to fully utilise both lanes to reduce queue length, as I look straight ahead, endeavouring to ignore all the stares of car drivers that I pass by. I am always in a rush and want everything to happen immediately, or ideally sooner. I know I am not endearing myself to anyone here, but hoping I'm not alone. There is a beautiful scene in the film Evan Almighty, where Morgan Freeman, who plays God, suggests to Evan's wife, who is confused by her husband turning into a modern-day Noah, "Let me ask you something. If someone prays for patience, you think God gives them patience? Or does he give them the opportunity to be patient?" For many years, Freedom Church, where I lead, has hoped, prayed and longed for a new building to call home. We recently purchased a plot of land and in February 2023 completed a planning application for a new church building and community centre. A year and a half on and we are still waiting for a definitive response. It has stretched my patience. Maybe God is simply giving me an opportunity to be more patient. I wonder what opportunities God is giving you to learn to be patient.
Thank you. Perhaps we can all learn from that. Now, Nikki, you've got the first letter to the editor, please.
And this one from Simon Lever, headed New Homes. Authorities and developers do not seem to take into account the dramatic effect that thousands of houses built in relatively compact areas can have a destructive effect on existing neighbourhoods. John Moore Barracks is a prime example. 1,000 homes equates to 2,000 residents, modest estimate, and around 800 vehicles. Extra schools will be needed too. 2,000 people in a relatively compact area would create challenges for doctors, surgeries, and general needs of residents. Bushfield Camp, South Winchester Golf Club, and Royal Down, Hursley, would effectively destroy areas of natural beauty very close to existing areas. These locations are all close to Winchester, creating serious infrastructure problems, already challenging, with thousands of vehicles using the road every day. The overall plan to essentially make Winchester a much larger city is flawed in the extreme. Winchester has doubtless been chosen because it is a desirable, very friendly location. I fear for Winchester's future, a central government can essentially dictate to local councils, who should be strong in confronting excessive housing construction. As for consultation sessions, I have the impression decisions have already been made and have to be sold to existing residents. And that from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Pothole paint. The magic pothole paint being used in this part of the world is not working. For at least a second time in recent years, our potholes have been identified, outlined with the magic white paint, and numbered. But no repair has subsequently been made. In our road, the magic pothole paint is fading again. Our pet pothole, opposite our gate, is a rectangle, 4 metres long and numbered 42. At the next repaint, if there is one, is it likely to have become at least number 50 from the east of the lane? But we have little faith in that any repair will follow. Is there anywhere in the country that has where the magic pothole paint works and potholes are filled? What's the secret? And that's from John Bristow of Kiln Lane, Otterbourne.
Give it to the youngsters. There is an increasingly vociferous campaign for the government to reverse its decision to withdraw winter fuel payments to pensioners who are not on benefits. It's perhaps worth remembering that the boomer generation, of which at 75 I am a member, has been the most privileged in history. At school, we all benefited from free school meals and even a glass of milk at morning break. Then, when we went to university, our fees were paid by the state. Like others in my 20s and married, I could afford a house, and the interest we paid on the mortgage could be offset against income to reduce the income tax we paid. Now, in our old age, many of us benefit from the generous defined benefit pension schemes of our past employers, and state pensions are protected by the triple lock. Young people today have none of these advantages. Indeed, graduates are expected to start work already indebted by around £50,000. Meanwhile, landlords continue to receive tax relief on their interest payments, a result of which house prices have soared because they can outbid any individual who now has to pay tax necessary to pay their mortgage interest. Rents are inevitably followed, making it it impossible for most youngsters to save the necessary deposits. And they can almost not conceive, or almost cannot conceive, buying until they're into their 30s and 40s. Is it not time for my generation to consider giving a little bit back to those younger than ourselves, still working to try and make a go of their lives? And that's from Mike Biden, Northbrook Close, St. Giles Hill, Winchester.
And from Ian Tate, headed No Fault Evictions. The Chronicle has published a number of articles regarding the use of Section 21, No Fault Eviction Order, by Bournemouth Churches Housing Association, BCHA, against a resident living in Sussex Street. On August the 15th, I sat through a court hearing for BCA's fourth attempt to evict their tenant of 27 years. The case was adjourned as the judge wanted to question a BCHA employee who hadn't turned up. BCHA don't own the Sussex Street property. It's owned by Winchester City Council, who now want their property back with vacant possession. I have recently been contacted by another BCHA tenant living in St John's Road, who has also been served with a Section 21 order, along with the three other property tenants. They have asked me if I can help, and I'm talking to both BCHA and WCC about what's happening. For background, BCHA's involvement in Winchester came about when they took over the operations and properties owned by Winchester Churches Housing Group, Keystone, in 2013, a sister organisation to the Night Shelter. At the time, they were accused of being asset strippers, but I was assured by their then CEO, Martin Hancock, that they had no intention of quitting Winchester. WCC made interest-free loans available to Keystone to buy and refurbish properties. The council gave Keystone a £90,000 grant to convert the office in St John's Road into four flats, and at one point they were housing 29 people over around eight properties in Winchester. If and when the St John's Road property is sold, BCHA will have effectively exported almost £3 million of Winchester money away to Dorset. I am certain that Bournemouth has some real issues of homelessness, but so does Winchester. Why has BCHA allowed to asset strip Keystone? I have to wonder why it was allowed to happen. And that from Ian Tate, Rumsey Road, Winchester.
Lack of funding. I think your readers deserve to know the truth about the Westview House Hostel, Chronicle, August the 1st, 8th and 15th. I have spoken to various members of the staff who have told me that the exaggerated claims of antisocial behaviour are the manifestation of a far deeper problem. It seems that the fundamental problem is funding, or lack of. The funding comes mainly from Winchester City Council, but indirectly from the County Council. There is a lot of pressure on Westview House management from above. The staff are doing their best to contain this problem. With regard to the decision to close Westview House in March, April, it can only be closed when all the residents are appropriately rehoused with adequate support. It may surprise your readers to know that virtually all the residents have mental health problems and require a high level of support. And that's from E. Mayor of Berwick Road, Week, Winchester.
And this letter is from Dr. Tony Saunders on Main Road, Otterbourne. Centre a disgrace. In the Hampshire Chronicle of August 15th, I read that, quote, Winchester High Street among the best in the UK. End quote. But the bus station in the centre of Winchester is a disgrace, shabby and full of cigarette ends and litter. Winchester is a beautiful city and host to many foreign visitors, so I am surprised that this is allowed to happen. I hope my complaint will be a wake-up call to remedy the situation.
And from Monica Gill, headed Car Park Woes. Having once again witnessed cars sitting in a queue waiting for a space to become vacant in Middle Brook Street car park, one must question the council decision to erect a cycle rack, which rarely houses cycles, thus reducing parking by three or four spaces. I understand the reasons behind introducing Sunday and overnight charging was to make up for the loss of revenue due to COVID, but it does beg the question how much revenue continues to be lost due to the loss of these spaces, not to mention the cost of erecting the cycle rack in the first place, money which could have been better spent on refurbishing the disgusting public toilets. Monica Gill, Lawn Street, Winchester. And as a letter editor's note, the City Council has approved a programme of refurbishing toilets across the district.
Change of use. While I have considerable sympathy with the notion that the answer to River Park Leisure Centre is to knock it down, returning the site to its original use as part of a natural method of flood avoidance, as part of the floodplain, it is wildly impractical, particularly given the parlous state of the finances of the council. The cost would be considerable, and removing an asset from an already depleted balance sheet would be counterproductive. One benefit of the use of River Park as an arts and crafts centre, additional to those already described, would be that the Hampshire Art Collection might be removed from storage to be displayed on a permanent basis so that its owners, the people of Hampshire, might have an opportunity to view their inheritance. At the moment, councillors and staff may see it, perhaps decorate their office with it, while the rest of us can merely wonder as to what it is that is being held in trust for us by the County Council. At one time, there was an annual showing of part of the collection, but this appears not to be in accord with the Council's thinking. and that's from John Seager Green, St Cross Road, St Cross, Winchester.
Will common sense prevail? Travelling by car into Winchester this week along the Andover Road, I found myself in a traffic queue stretching from the City Road traffic lights right back to Park Road. And this is without any diversion from the A34 because of any accident. What are the prospects of traffic movement for the future, with hundreds more homes still to be built on Barton Farm, and the prospect of 750 to 1,000 further homes proposed for the St John Moore Barracks site? The road infrastructure into our lovely city is what it is, with its obvious practical limitations, and which no authority or council with the best will in the world can possibly change in any realistic way. Will common sense on the outskirts of the city prevail before we become known as, quote, gridlock Chester? And that is from Graham Topping of Chawton Close, Hairstock, Winchester. And it's accompanied by a photograph which is taken just outside the building where we're recording this, showing traffic completely jammed up, including somebody who's stationary on a cross-hatched area, which I thought was against the highway code, but never mind.
Ah, but you can't be sure that he wasn't moving. It's only a photograph.
I understand that and analyse that.
Well, yes, to be debated further.
To be debated further.
And the last letter, Blot on the Landscape, from Brian Scott of Southgate Street. The plan for Dummer Hospital and associated nursing accommodation fits quite nicely with the Popham Estate and Mitchell Dever Town development to form a nice blot on the landscape. It all adds up now. And that's from Brian Scott, Southgate Street, Winchester. And now I think we've got editorial comment. Nikki.
Which is headed, Why We Need to Tackle Graffiti. At first glance, it appears a small thing of little significance. The Chronicle's Belgarum column has a story this week about a new graffiti artist, in quotes, who has been leaving his or her tag on walls around the city. Bands, spelled in capital letters, B-A-N-D-S, or perhaps it is Band 5, has been appearing for several months around the place, including under the railway bridge in Barfield Close and on the Hockley Viaduct. Many people will shrug their shoulders and say, so what? Graffiti has been an issue in towns and cities since the 1960s and 70s, when shaven-headed youth felt the need to paint, quote, skins or, quote, united everywhere. The Hampshire Chronicle detests graffiti. It is a form of bullying that makes many older or vulnerable people feel insecure. They feel the streets are less safe when paint is daubed or sprayed close to their homes or where they walk. As well as its ugliness, it is the thought that a talentless and unknown someone is openly breaking the law and getting away with it that disconcerts people. A menacing absence. It needs to be tackled and stopped. There is truth in the assertion that clamping down on low-level crime such as this deters other more serious kinds of offending, making the streets safer and more pleasant for all. As for whoever bans is, someone else has given their own interpretation of the handwork. The work, retard, has been scribbled next to it on the bridge in Barfield Close. It is hard to disagree.
Thank you, Norma. Now you have first person, please.
And hopefully this will melt the cockles of your heart. And it's Love Travels at Snail's Pace by George Hayter. Bella came out of her preschool nursery excited and holding a plastic cup. In the cup was a snail. That surprised her mum, who had come as usual to collect her four-year-old home. Staff at the preschool door explained that the little girl had found the slimy creature in the playground. They said that for the rest of the day, Bella had observed the shell-lugging gastropod slithering around on leaves in the cup. Staff had warned Bella that prodding the animal would be cruel, but when the slithering slowed, she still found it hard to resist an occasional tap with a leaf stem. Having decided the snail was a she, Bella had named her Fluffy Florence. Bella was allowed to get into the car with Florence, and when they got there, Bella proudly carried her new friend into the family home. She spent the rest of the day scrutinising Florence as the animal wandered around the leaves in a Tupperware box. Bella's little brother, Casper, joined her in lying on the bedroom floor and feeding cucumber and lettuce to their slow-motion Tupperware captive. Self-assured Bella delighted providing commentary for Casper, age two. She kept him informed as Florence ate, blinked, and waved impressive tentacles. Bella may have been entranced by the exotic newcomer, but when it was time for bed, she knew enough about decorum to make a distinction between herself and the snail. The slobbery one would not be sleeping in her bedroom, she decided. Next morning, down on the ground floor, poor Florence was still in her Tupperware house. I'm not sure how many days Florence remained in involuntary guest, but it was a lot less than a week. When the time came for her departure, Bella was by then in close relationship with the snail. She and her passive little bro must have absorbed every intimacy of Florence's humdrum lifestyle. Their parents decided that the evening was the best time to set Florence free, and so, just before bedtime, their dad took Bella and Casper to the flower bed in the back garden. He laid the plastic box on its side, and sure enough, Florence set off for the rim of the rim at a snail's equivalent of a gallop. She was hammering along at an estimated 1 FPH, 1 foot per hour. And the children seemed melancholy at her straight-line dash for freedom. Dad tried to lighten the mood. "It's quite exciting that we were letting her go now, isn't it?" Bella disagreed. "No, not exciting," she said. "It's sad." I know the conversation verbatim because their mother videoed Florence's farewell on her phone and sent it to me on a WhatsApp. Bella said she looked forward to seeing Florence again one day in someone else's garden, and she wondered if Florence would still remember her name. And then Florence was out of the box and Bella looked disappointed. "Shall we say bye then? Now we're going to go to bed," said Dad. "Do you want to give her one more stroke?" Bella stroked the snail's shell with one finger. "Bye-bye, fluffy Florence," Dad continued. "We love you very much and thank you for coming to stay with us." Tears began to well up in Bella's eyes, and then Dad said, "We'll miss you." And with that, the little girl burst into tears. Perhaps Bella's wrench from her first pet was part of learning of life, with its painful comings and goings, and even part of preparing for the ups and downs of romantic love. Bella and Casper are my grandchildren. A week later, my daughter and I took them to look round Guildford Cathedral. In the grass outside, they found a snail, and they lay down and watched it waving its tentacles and chewing. Then they found that there were lots of snails in that grass. This time, Bella said nothing about wanting to take a snail home. She was a little more grown up.
Thank you. Now we move on. We've got a Belgarum item, I think. Andrew?
I've got to recover the cockles from the bottom of my heart, whatever the expression is. We got two articles, actually, in Belgarum this week. One is about the graffiti, and Nikki's already read about that, so I won't go through that one. But the other one is about a musician pens a memoir. Robin Hitchcock. The renowned singer-songwriter Robin Hitchcock has released a memoir recounting his pivotal year at 14. Hitchcock's book, entitled 1967, How I Got There and Why I Never Left, delves into his transformative months spent at Winchester College. This eye-opening period, beginning on September the 13th, saw him develop a great affinity for people like Bob Dylan and Pink Floyd. It was also the year he came across Brian Eno for the first time. Hitchcock, the founder of the 1976 art rock band The Soft Boys, and a long-standing figure in alternative rock, has more than 20 albums under his belt that successfully blend folk, psychedelia, and a slice of British cynicism. He describes 1967 as a year of balance, of gains and losses, which played out like blissful synchronicity. Interestingly, he grew by 9 inches at the same time that Dylan began shifting towards electrification and pop groups evolved into rock bands. This September, Hitchcock is set to return to his old stomping grounds. He'll be performing a concert at St. Mary's Church, Twyford, offering a chance for fans to experience his, quote, paintings you can listen to, live and in person. His memoir, meanwhile, gives readers a glimpse into the artist's formative years, marrying his personal growth with the broader music revolution of the era. And that is accompanied by a photograph of Robin Hitchcock, who's holding a clock, an alarm clock, an old-fashioned alarm clock, that is just 1 minute to 12.
Okay, now we move on to announcements, and we start with What's On. A couple of items from the Theatre Royal. On Sunday the 1st of September at 2:30 p.m, there's a cinema concert, not a live performance, a cinema concert of Power of Love by André Rieu, filmed in his hometown of Maastricht with the Johann Strauss Orchestra. If you want details of tickets, it's 01962 840 440. Well, the following Saturday, the 7th of September, at 7:30 p.m, there's an Elton John tribute show. And again, tickets can be obtained from 01962 840 440. In Winchester Cathedral, on Tuesday the 10th of September, sees the return of the popular Tuesday lunchtime concerts. And there's a performance by Nick Sorway on piano and Verity Sawbridge as a vocalist. The concert is at 1:15. It's free to enter. And more information from 01962 857 275. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 23rd of August at 6:05 a.m. and begins at 8:09 p.m. And next Wednesday the 28th of August, it ends at 6:13 a.m. and begins at 7:58 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed, work on pop-up park still ongoing. Civic chiefs have confirmed that work is still taking place on a pop-up park in the centre of Winchester. As previously reported, the park in Friarsgate has been constructed as part of the Central Winchester Regeneration Scheme, also known as Silver Hill. The site has been constructed as a meanwhile use, following the demolition of the Friarsgate Medical Centre earlier this year. It would leave the area a more pleasant place for people to go while wider plans are being drawn up for the site. Winchester City Council has confirmed that the park is still not fully completed, with a new hoarding and additional flowers and seating still to be installed. The council has also said that there is not a set completion date for the space, as it has been designed to be flexible so it can be used for various different events and activities. As an example of this, Winchester City Council is hosting a family archaeology event at the pop-up park on Thursday, August the 29th. The event will offer a range of activities for all ages, including cleaning artefacts, touring the dig site, meeting the archaeologists, and more. The Family Fun Day will run from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and is free to attend with no booking needed. Anyone wanting to volunteer to take part in the community excavation should visit the Pre-Construct Archaeology website and sign up. And there's a lovely photograph, well no, actually it's a painting or a computer-generated thing, of the park and space and trees and benches and lovely sort of raised flower beds. A great improvement.
Upset at cutbacks to winter fuel payments. The new Labour government has recently announced plans to restrict winter fuel payments to only be accessible to those receiving pension credit, writes Tom Jackson. The payments were originally set to offer all those born before September the 23rd, 1958, between 100 and 300 this winter to help the elderly pay for heating bills. This reduction in eligibility comes after the new government's discovery of a 22 billion hole in public finances, which the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, blames on the previous Conservative leadership. A reduction of this level is set to have a substantial impact on the elderly population, affecting an estimated 10 million people. This was met with major concern from the pensioners around the country, of which, due to this reduction, many will struggle to pay for their basic commodities this winter. It will have a particular significant effect in Winchester's pensioners, with the number eligible to receive the winter fuel payment dropping from 25,264 in 22-23 to 1,647 in the future, a 93% decrease. Winchester people reflect the disbelief and disappointment from pensioners around the country. Patricia Galbraith, 78, described it as a big shock and a disappointment, explaining that there will be people that it affects greatly. She also added that the government targets older people. Similarly, Brendan Wilson, 80, criticised towards the government's decision, suggesting that perhaps they'd like to live the way we are doing.
Homegrown, the key to the new farm shop. A new farm shop selling locally sourced products has opened just outside Winchester. Hampshire Pantry, which sells a range of homegrown products and enjoys views over rolling green hills, is located at Bushfield Farm on Badger Farm Road. Its owners are Annabel Terry and Patrick Young, the publicans in charge of the Meon Valley Country Pubs, the Shoe Inn in Exton, and the Buck's Head in Meonstoke. They're using produce from their own farm for the shop, which also has a cafe, coffee roastery, pot shop, and picnic patches. The shop at Bushfield Farm was previously called the Compton Down Farm Shop. Hampshire Pantry's manager, Alice Denham-Smith, said, "Everyone's been saying some really lovely things. We've definitely got a lot of things we want to do, and we're still working on." And Patrick said, "We've been in planning for the best part of 9 months. The building took 6 months." He's also been relishing the challenge of persuading farmers to work with the new business. "It's been quite difficult to find local Hampshire products. We've been pushing behind producers to do a little bit more. We've been to a spelt farm near Basingstoke because we want to use their produce for our bread." Baking is a central part of Hampshire Pantry's operation, not least because their baker, Thomas, is a bit of a secret find, in Patrick's words. Thomas took up baking as a hobby during lockdown while he was working as a delivery driver, and now bakes bread for all of Patrick's pubs as well as his new farm shop. This sort of community feel is what Patrick hopes will form the basis for the new business: local people working on local produce. Camilla Jackson, manager of The Shoe, said, "It's a farm cooperative and an additional side business. Hampshire Pantry started at The Shoe selling croissants and other homemade products. Now it's its own business. I think they've been very busy. They only opened on Monday." Another of Hampshire Pantry's suppliers is Worthy Earth, a collection of regenerative no-dig market gardens aiming to rebuild community around food again, according to their website. Other local businesses providing food for the farm shop are Vale Farm Eggs, based near South Winchester Golf Club, and the BEK Bakery in Eastleigh. One reviewer posted, "Excellent setup and community on the rise. Felt very welcome and we all enjoyed our stay. The espresso on the tasting flight was the highlight." The shop is open Monday to Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. and weekends. And those interested in finding out more about Hampshire Pantry can visit their Facebook page. And this is accompanied by a couple of photographs, one showing again the lovely look or the lovely view out from the cafe over the green fields. And another is a close-up picture of some salted butter, which has been made by the Cross Valley Milk at Kingsworth, made from Cross Valley Milk at Kingsworthy.
And this one headed, Fly Tipper ordered to cough up £2,600. A Hampshire man has been convicted of fly-tipping offence after the incident was captured by hidden cameras on a Mitchell Diva country lane. Patrick Crumlish, 53, of Carousel Park, near Mitchell Diva, pleaded guilty at Basingstoke Magistrates Court. The court heard that late at night on Monday, July the 3rd, last year, a tipper vehicle owned by Crumlish was caught on two council-operated cameras illegally dumping wooden battens, roofing tiles, packaging and horse manure in the remote location. Following prosecution by Winchester City Council, Crumlish was handed a fine of £600, with prosecution costs of £1,497.97, a compensation order for clearance costs of £355.29, and a victim surcharge of £240. Crumlish was convicted of controlling the use of the offending vehicle at the time of the offence, after failing to name the person who carried out the fly-tipping. Councillor Neil Cutler, Winchester City Council Deputy Leader, said, "Fly-tipping is really damaging to our local communities, wildlife and environment, and we are taking robust action against those who commit offences, as shown by this latest prosecution." The council operates hidden surveillance cameras at targeted locations throughout the district to catch and deter offenders, and in this case the footage was instrumental in securing a conviction. "We also rely on reports from the public. I'd encourage anyone who witnesses or captures footage of someone dumping waste illegally in our district to report it. Reports of fly tipping can be made on the council's website at winchester.gov.uk/report via the Your Winchester app or by calling 0300 300 0013. And there's a photograph of the really horrible pile of rubbish that he's dumped.
Steps to rid motorway of its lengthy queues. Three junctions on the M3 have been ranked among Hampshire's worst roads for traffic. The stretch of road around Junction 11 eastbound and Junctions 9 and 10 westbound have filled three of the top 10 spots for the country's most clogged up roads. All three stretches cause motorists around 30 seconds of delay per mile on average, meaning that there is a 58% increase in the time it takes to drive through them. Steps are being taken, however, to reduce queues around the Winnall roundabout at Junction 9. A £200 million project by National Highways to reshape the roundabout was given the green light on May the 17th to a mixed reception from the public. Some cannot understand why such a large sum should be spent on the project, with some calling the plans over-engineered. Chris Gillam of Winchester Friends of the Earth said, "We are disappointed but not surprised that this scheme has been rubber stamped, though it represents very poor value for money, even in the skewed economic appraisal mythology used for these things. Once a central government replaced the older inquiry system with a fast-tracked examination process, there were objectors are not allowed to be cross-examined evidence. It was more or less inevitable that issues would be oversimplified. Nevertheless, it's a worry that key elements of objectors' evidence have been treated by inspectors in such a superficial way." And there is a small picture of the westbound carriageway at a standstill.
Pub in the Good Pub Guide for 50 years. A Hampshire country pub is receiving an award for appearing in the longest-running Good Beer Guide for 50 years continuously. The Flower Pots in Brandy Mount Cheriton will receive the award from the Campaign for Real Ale Canberra on Friday, the first day of the pub's annual Pots Fest. Rupert Boisier, managing director of the Flowerpots Inn and Brewery, said he was proud of the achievement. He told the Chronicle, "It's not just us, the three of us in the village who own the pots. We've only owned it for 5 years. The previous 45 years it was owned by Paul Tickner and Joe Bartley, who also live in the village. We have been in the guide from this year for 50 years consecutively, and I think the 50th anniversary of the guide was last year. And I think there are only a few pubs which have been in it consecutively for that length of time. To cut a long story short, it's quite an accolade, and it's a rare thing to have achieved, and I think Camra is quite proud, particularly in the South Hampshire branch, that they have a pub that has been in the guide for many years. And we're really proud too. Paul and Joe were the real heroes. They kept it going all that time, and 45 years on the trot, they were in the guide." Robert said that he believes that the continued success of the pub is because of the staff's core ethos, which is, "It's all about the beer." He added, "For us, it's all about the beer and the DNA of the place, obviously contributed to by the fact that we have the brewery next door, and it's gone from strength to strength and produces beer which is sold in 300 or so pubs. And at our peril, do we forget that? We taste the beer every morning and evening. We make sure it's conditioned properly, and we make sure it's on temperature control. We are very much a traditional brewery. We use grain from Hampshire. We're near the source of the River Itchen, and we try to keep everything authentic." Robert said that he wanted to thank Joe and Paul, as well as Camra. He said, "Without Camra, we wouldn't get the award. And they are massive supporters of Real Ale, and that's what we do. I think all the staff who've worked at the pots over the years need to be thanked, predominantly people who live in the village and in Arlesford. I would also definitely thank the residents of Cheriton, because they support us, and without them, we wouldn't have a business." And it's accompanied by a couple of photographs of the flower pots. Which, if you haven't visited, I would strongly recommend a visit.
Students celebrate A-level successes. It is the day pupils across Hampshire had been waiting for with eagerness and dread as the A-level results were released. In Winchester, staff and students at Peter Simmons College celebrated as the graduating class receives their grades. The pass rate for pupils at the college stands at 98%. With 33% of grades being A star or A. Meanwhile, the proportion of the highest grades, A star, A, B, is 63%, while the pass rate for vocational courses is 99.3%, with 58% of grades awarded at distinction and distinction star level. Principal Sarah Russell said, "We are absolutely thrilled with our students' grades. They have done brilliantly, and we are extremely proud of each and every one of them. There was some suggestion that nationally, 2024 would see a fall in student grades, but it is not something Simmons has seen. Our results are even higher than those achieved in 2023. Traditionally, Simmons students outperform their peers, and this year is no exception, with a third of students achieving the very top grades of A star, A, and two-thirds getting A star and B. This is truly exceptional." Among the students celebrating was Milo Euling, who attended Westgate before studying at Peter Simmons. He had achieved an A in photography and two distinctions in digital media despite undergoing emergency surgery for a brain tumour. He said, "I'm really ecstatic. I'm really pleased with my results after everything that's happened recently. I'm heading to Southampton to study television production because I love TV. The digital media course has really prepared me for it." Elsewhere in Winchester, St Swithin School said that it had received its strongest set of A-level results in a non-pandemic year since 2015. A total of 92% of A-levels at the all-girls school were graded A-star to B, while over two-thirds, 68%, were A-star A. Half of year group earned grades AAA and above, while three-quarters gained AAB or higher. 40% of U6 students achieved at least one A-star grade. In Eastleigh, Barton Peveril reported that nearly a third of all A-level students achieved either an A-star or an A. 98.5% of A-level students passed their A-levels, with 59% achieving A star and B grades. 100% of students studying Level 3 vocational subjects, which are the equivalent to A-levels, passed their courses, with over 83% achieving a distinction plus or distinction. And there's a picture of all the Peter Simmons students, hands in the air, and Sarah Russell, the principal, in front. And I couldn't make out what they were holding, but actually they're blow-up A's and gold stars, quite obviously. And somehow they managed to get a picture of five of the girls leaping into the air with their hands above their heads and their knees up behind them. Quite something. Plus their A-levels, of course.
Dismay over bus service changes. Stagecoach's decision to drastically cut the number of buses to Winchester has dismayed Whitchurch residents. Once providing 12 daily services, the route is now reduced to just 4, mainly catering for college students, leaving many residents stranded. The residents have now decided to rally against the cuts, creating an online petition that's already gathered 900 signatures. Caroline Barber, a Whitchurch resident, said there used to be at least one bus an hour up until about 7 in the evening, with a few more on weekends, but this has been reduced to just 2 buses in the morning towards Winchester and 2 in the evening back to Whitchurch. She said the cuts ignore the needs of other residents, especially those who rely on the bus for essential trips. "It's a blow to our town," Mrs. Barber said. "They're not taking care of people who need to get down for hospital appointments or shift workers like the NHS care workers who need buses throughout the day. A bus service in a town like this isn't meant to be a profit-making exercise. It's supposed to provide a vital service for those who need it." She said it's upsetting that Stagecoach took this decision without any consultation with residents and bus users. Another resident, Dan Naylor, said, "I've been in contact with Stagecoach for the last year, trying to petition for a bit later bus so people could go out in the evenings," he said. "We wanted the service increased, but instead they've cut it down to almost nothing. It no longer serves the railway station, which is crucial for many residents." He said the cuts a huge impact on the residents, particularly vulnerable groups. Stagecoach statement said, "We are sorry to confirm that we no longer operate a full daytime service to and from Winchester from the 1st of September. Although college buses will remain on college days only, along with some of our other local bus routes, Service 86 operates at a significant financial loss and is unsustainable in its current form. We've had to take significant action this summer to address this challenge, including taking difficult decisions for a number of college buses we can offer to Winchester. We're simply not able to offer the same service to as many students in September as we have been doing in previous years because we've been operating very high mileage at a low revenue without any direct subsidy support for the routes with low fare income." And there is a picture of the Stagecoach bus. Sad, really sad. How are people going to get around?
And continuing our theme about buses, there's a chance to travel back in time on the buses. Heritage buses will once again be rumbling around Winchester District as part of the nationwide Heritage Open Days. King Alfred buses will be offering free rides and will be put on a display. James Freeman, chairman of the Friends of King Alfred Buses, which operated in the city until 1973, said, "The three themes for this year's events are routes, networks, and connections, and they could have been specifically set for our participation. Once again, we'll be supporting the Heritage Open Days on Sunday, September the 15th, with a grand display of our unique collection of King Alfred buses and coaches at St. Catherine's Park and Ride site between 9 a.m. and 10:30 a.m., followed by another of our renowned classic running days, when the King Alfred buses will be providing a range of free rides to the villages around the city between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. In addition, the popular Leyland Atlantean open-top double-decker, index number HOR590E, will be running a free shuttle service between Winchester Broadway and Hythe Street for the Hyde 900 celebrations on both Saturday and Sunday, September the 14th and 15th. Another innovation will be a special poetry bus, leaving the Broadway on Sunday at 11 a.m. And there'll be poetry readings on the bus as the trip westwards to Crawley and back. The main event has two elements. Early on Sunday from 9 a.m., 15 of the FOKAB's collection of vehicles will be displayed side by side at St. Catherine's. This presents a unique opportunity to see the whole fleet and compare the different styles of vehicles from the 1929 Leyland Lion through to the massive Leyland Panthers dating from 1970. A free shuttle bus will operate to and from the Broadway to get people to and fro. From 11 a.m., free rides will be on offer from under the shadow of King Alfred's statue in the Broadway in the traditional way. This time they will concentrate on the country routes operated up to 1973 by King Alfred Motor Services. Buses will be going to Twyford, Colden Common, Sparshall, Crawley, King Somborne, Stockbridge, Broughton, Sutton Stockney, Stoke Charity, East Stratton, Mourne Hill and Aylesbury. In addition, the three pre-war buses in the collection will be providing shorter trips, all for free, around the city centre, providing a most unusual chance to sample bus travel from the 1930s. The FOKAB information and sales stand will be positioned, as usual, outside the Guildhall, and there will be a transport bazaar in Buskett Yard, just beside the bus station and directly accessible from the Broadway. A programme giving full details of the event will be available on the day for £6. Sales of these programmes go towards the costs of conserving and operating the old buses. And every sale makes a difference, said Mr. Freeman. Now, this is accompanied, it would be very difficult not to comment actually on this, it's in two ways. It's accompanied by a photograph of the buses lined up, some of the magnificent old buses, and you'll be able to see that on display on Sunday, September the 15th. And also, rather sadly, I mean, its three themes are routes, networks and connections, which is as true today as it was back in those times. And there'll be some amongst you who remember the kind of services that were offered in those days.
And this head chef Andras's food passions revealed. A chef who has worked, quote, every role possible, is now serving up pizzas in the heart of Winchester Centre. Andras Kürkus from Hungary moved to Winchester a few years ago after living in Birmingham. The head chef at the Stable in the Square is known for dishing up fresh sourdough pizzas with incredible toppings and sides. Having worked a variety of jobs in hospitality, lockdown helped Andras find his passion for cooking. Andras said, born in Hungary in 1986, studied hospitality, catering and cooking in college, worked in restaurants, started as a kitchen porter, then moved to the front of house as a waiter and manager when I was 14 years old. I worked almost every possible position that a restaurant requires. Festivals, street food stalls, pubs, bars, cafe, fine dining restaurants, whatever you can imagine I tried. I always wanted to know more and I was not lazy to learn and work hard. After I moved to the UK in 2017, I found a job at Birmingham International Airport and worked in Blanc at Noir Champagne Bar as a team leader. Later, the place changed to Bottega Prosecco Bar and I kept my position. Unfortunately, the global pandemic and restrictions hit hard the aviation sector and the hospitality. After 4 years in Birmingham, I moved to Winchester and since then I have worked at the Stable as head chef. The proudest moment in my career so far is to have achieved the head chef position after I proved my capabilities in the stable's management, for whom I will always be grateful for giving me this opportunity. Asked what his favourite place to eat in Hampshire was, he said, "Other than the stable, I am always looking for new places and experiences, different cuisines and dishes, to keep myself in a loop with the trends." Asked what chef he admired most, Andras said, "I was lucky to be able to visit the Roca brothers' restaurant, the El Celar, the Can Roca, in Girona, Spain. The head chef," I'm going to pronounce it Juan Roca, because it's definitely not Joan, "is one of the best chefs in the world. He collaborates traditional cuisine together with avant-garde techniques, which implies research of both modern techniques and traditional recipes. He is the chef who I admire the most." And there's a lovely picture of Andras, looking a very nice face, obviously loving his job, and a lovely one of the stable with outdoor seating and masses of flowers on the outside as decoration.
Student reconstructs Old Minster. A history student from the University of Winchester is using 3D printing and magnets to reconstruct ancient buildings. The idea, introduced on August the 15th, is helping student Jacob Newbury understand the different eras that make up historical buildings and the original processes of their construction. Instead of just studying blueprints and photographs, Jacob designs multi-part 3D models that can be interlocked with magnetic pieces in each of their wall sections. He found that this practical approach not only brought his understanding to a new level, but could also be an immense educational aid. These detailed, real-life models can be useful from primary school education to university studies. To illustrate his concept, Jacob selected Winchester's Old Minster, a historic building whose foundations remain visible in the lawn next to Winchester Cathedral. He discusses his findings and methodology in a recent published article in the journal Digital Application in Archaeology and Cultural Heritage. This 25-year-old from Hawley, West Sussex, switched to a history-focused career following his fascination with genealogy. His interest was broadened after working as a freelancer in a digital photo restoration and colorization after school. Lockdown due to COVID allowed him to consolidate his knowledge in history, learning to read, transcribe and translate medieval Latin and to master 3D modeling. On finishing his medieval history degree, he now eyes a doctorate and will begin his studies in Winchester next month, where he hopes to continue his exploration of history through modern technology. And there's a picture of, well, it's an artist's impression of Winchester's Old Minster, which seems to be in two parts with a gap in the middle, which is quite, and an awful lot of windows.
And this article is about quite a cleverly named project called the Step Timber Challenge. The often taken for granted work of hospital porters, who average around 27,000 steps or about 12 miles each day, has inspired a fundraising challenge at Hampshire hospitals. The porters' physically demanding work, every day ensuring patients and equipment are where they need to be, serves a crucial function in the hospital system. From September the 1st, Hampshire Hospitals Charity is running the Step-Tember Challenge. The initiative is open to the public to mimic a day, a week, or a month's worth of steps taken by a hospital porter. Participants can choose their mode of movement, whether it's walking, running, swimming, cycling, or something more creative, and then notify the charity when they've completed their self-set target. The challenge is intended to raise funds which will enhance the experience for patients, visitors, and staff at Hampshire hospitals. Fundraisers may seek sponsorship per step, per mile, or a single lump sum for completing the challenge. Aside from gathering pledges, the initiative also aims to shed light on the endeavours of hospital porters, whose job consists of a form of everyday marathon. The charity encourages everyone willing to step into the porter's shoes for a day or more to join in. Sabrina Marsden, fundraising manager of Hampshire Hospitals Charity, said, "Our porters do a fantastic job, and we wanted to highlight the contribution they make to our patients and colleagues with this challenge."
Bishop's call amid fears. The Bishop of Winchester called for people to, quote, look after others' safety, amid fears that national protests could spread to Southampton. The Right Reverend Philip Mountstephen made the comments after reports that at least two protests were heading to the city in the wake of riots following the fatal stabbing of three children in Southport. In a video posted on X, the Bishop said, "Southampton has always been a place that has been open to the world, in a way that has changed the world for better. These recent days we have seen a dark side to many of our cities, as they have been marred by violence and looting. People who should be able to walk the streets without fear can no longer do so. I pray that in this city that will not be so." He added, "Let's not be people who provoke others. Let's not let ourselves be provoked by others. Let's be people who look after others' safety, who look after our young people's safety by not letting them go out to be caught up in mobs and do things they will later regret, perhaps deeply. Let's show this city's best face to the world and say that whatever may happen elsewhere, it will not happen here. Not in this great city, whose greatness rests in it being an open, global, ocean city. I am unashamedly a Christian. I found Christian faith for myself in this city. As a Christian, I follow one who was lynched by the mob. But as he died, he turned the other cheek and prayed, 'Father, forgive them. They don't know what they are doing.'"
Sunflower site hopes for a bumper weekend. A Hampshire sunflower field is preparing for a bumper bank holiday weekend. Silkstead Sunflowers, near Winchester, run by Kaylee and Jeff Venn, has brought a splash of yellow to the countryside as it welcomes visitors from all over the country. This weekend, it will put on a spectacle with a unicorn ride, circus acts, and a variety of other events for the whole family. Tickets for the day can be booked on the Silkstead website. Business has been good so far this year at the 10-acre site, with over 900 people turning up so far to marvel at the huge yellow flowers. The site includes a maze with a secret feature, games for kids, and a viewing platform, and a dozen rubber ducks hidden throughout the trail. "The ducks are a new addition this year," Katie said. Henry, her son, adds that all the ducks have names. Entry to the site is £5 per person, and the price includes three sunflowers, which visitors are free to take home. And there is a lovely picture of Kaylee Venn with her three children and standing in front of a very big sign that says Maze, and with all the sunflowers behind them.
And here's notice of another event. This is the Poetry Day. Winchester Poetry Day 2024 is set to entertain lovers of verse and curious newcomers with a programme brimming with poems, performances and workshops. The event is at the Arc in Jury Street on Saturday, October the 5th, between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. The highlight is set to be the live announcement of the Winchester Poetry Prize 2024 winner, along with a special celebration for the entrance of the Hampshire Young Poets competition. Poetry aficionados can look forward to readings from Claire Shaw, Susmita Bhattacharya, Akila Richards, Adriana Lord, and Write a Note ensemble including Anita Foxall, Andy White, Reba Rush, Harley Trislove, and the Village Boys. Notably, the organisers continue to ensure the event's accessibility by providing relaxed performances. The headline event, the Winchester Poetry Prize ceremony, will be available for in-person and online audiences, with British Sign Language interpretation provided. The majority of the Winchester Poetry Day 2024 programme is free of charge, although attendees must book a ticket in advance. The organisers welcome any support through donations on their website. The support received helps maintain affordable prices, enabling a wider audience to partake and participate in the power of poetry.
Hearty Meal follows a fun game of golf. With the summer holidays in full swing and the weather staying warm, what better way is there to relax than with a round of golf? However, if you go down to Gunwharf Quays in Portsmouth, you can try 9 mini golf holes with a unique twist. Art and Putt is exactly what it sounds like, a mini golf course where every hole is inspired by famous artists and their work, from Andy Warhol to Frida Kahlo. I visited the course with my sister and we had a great time. Each hole has a unique gimmick inspired by the artist in question. For example, the Warhol-inspired hole requires you to hit a golf ball into a Campbell's soup can to get it close to the hole, all of which were inspired and meant that no two holes were the same. My favourite was the one inspired by Salvador Dali, which featured a tilting maze you had to drop your ball into. You would then have to tilt the maze to find which hole it would drop out of into the putting field, meaning you could end up having to take several swings or just one to get the ball into the hole. The course was quite heavily attended when we went, but things moved at a good speed and we had a fun time, and I'm not just saying this because I won. After golf, my sister and I went for lunch at the Giggling Squid. I went to the Giggling Squid in Winchester a few months ago, so I knew what to expect in terms of quality, but it was nice to take my sister somewhere she had never been before. Starting with drinks, I had a virgin jungle colada, which had a beautiful coconut taste, while my sister went for a Thai tea. We then followed this with our starters. I had crispy squid bits and a wonderfully warming dish that had a very satisfying crunch, and my sister went for chicken satay, which she really enjoyed once she had taken the chili off. For our mains, I had a marinated steak served with a side of jasmine rice, and my sister enjoyed a king prawn pad thai. I liked the steak quite a bit. Some of the meat melted in my mouth, but there was one or two pieces that were too chewy for me to enjoy properly. Likewise, my sister enjoyed her main, but she had to deshell the prawns herself, and the meal didn't come with an extra plate or bowl for her to put the shells into. If something had been provided, that might have made things easier for her. But these are just small nitpicks, especially since the rest of our meal was so nice. Suffice to say, if you find yourself with an afternoon with nothing to do, I would recommend visiting Gunwharf Quays and trying both the mini golf and the Giggling Squid. I doubt you'll be disappointed.
3A marks 35 years with a cake and a quiz. A Winchester society recently celebrated its 35th anniversary with a party. The Mayor of Winchester, Russell Gordon Smith, cut the celebration cake at a party to mark the occasion for Winchester's U3A. In his address to members, he contrasted the U3A movement with the many students he had seen graduating recently. The latter wanted a degree to get a good job or further their academic career, whereas U3A members learn purely for the sake of knowledge alone. This month's meeting, like all the U3A monthly talks, was held at Littleton Hall, and before the substantial tea, U3A members enjoyed a quiz about antiques by the former auctioneer Peter Raw. He invited his audience to value various pieces he'd brought along, from a plated trophy worth £10 to a painting of a bull valued around £25,000. Members' guesses were usually way off the mark. Winchester U3A, aimed at those who are retired or working part-time, runs more than 60 groups, such as languages and history, but also more social gatherings like walks, cycling and wine appreciation. And there is a picture of the mayor cutting the cake with a number of the U3A members around him.
New Homes Go Ahead at former post office site. Winchester City Council planners have approved an application to transform a former post office site into new homes. As previously reported, Aldbury Homes want to demolish the closed Waltham Chase convenience store in Winchester Road and build four new homes. The application also covered the construction of access, parking, and associated works to make the properties viable. Winchester City Council's Planning Committee approved the plans on Wednesday, August the 14th. Speaking in opposition, Sheffield Parish Councillor Margaret Jones said that she strongly objects to the application. She said, "I have lived in this area all my life, and I know the site well. It's important to the street scene of Waltham Chase, and its building dates back to the 1900s. The parish council feels that the existing building should be retained and refurbished unless there is an overriding reason that this cannot be done for structural reasons. The gap between the neighbour and the post office is too narrow, something which was commented on by Urban Design. The parking provided will not be sufficient for the occupants, guests or deliveries. Plots 3 and 4 will have to juggle their vehicles to get in and around and turn around, something that's only possible if there's no visitor parking. There is a similar development opposite Morgan's Garage by this developer, which exits onto the Winchester Road, and it has been witnessed where delivery or taxis pull up into the drive and then can't turn around and have to reverse onto the main road." Councillor Jones also raised concerns over flooding in the village, calling it a big problem. Speaking in support of the application, agent Jacob Goodenough said, "Regenerating sites like this one is essential to meeting the district's housing needs. Parking is in accordance with the local area, and the development has been designed in consultation with officers, and adjustments have been made at the request of officers and in response to comments received during the application. This includes reducing the building height." Councillor Jonathan Williams, who represents Bishops Waltham, said, "I have listened carefully to the concerns and the questions that have been raised here. There have been many reasons stated not to support the application, but unfortunately we must judge the application on our planning policies, and we must judge it on its own merits. The consultees have not raised any significant objections, and the amended plans do take into consideration some issues which have been raised. The application was approved by 7-1. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the councillors and James Goodenough getting ready to have the meeting, all seated round a square of tables. And also a picture of the old convenience store, which is now closed down and boarded off.
Temporary lights set up at Junction. Temporary four-way traffic lights have been installed on a major Winchester road while work is carried out. The temporary lights will be at the junction of Eastern Lane and Moorside Road, while Scotia Gas Networks, SGN, undertake repair and maintenance work to a gas main. It is likely to cause severe delays on one of the city's busiest roads. The work is expected to last up to 8 weeks. A Hampshire County Council spokesperson said, "SGN has been liaising closely with the County Council as they prepare for an essential upgrade to a gas main on Eastern Lane at the junction with Moorside Road. Some disruption will be unavoidable in this busy area during the works. SGN will be doing all they can to complete the upgrade quickly as possible, including working extended hours. They will also be monitoring the traffic carefully and control the traffic lights manually during busy times if this becomes necessary. The duration of the work is currently estimated 8 weeks based on similar schemes. When the work begins, it may be possible to refine this estimate."
Rotarian sees for himself on Uganda trip. Rotarian Nick Bell has recently returned from a third trip to Uganda to visit projects funded and overseen by Winchester Rotary. The projects are undertaken by Great Lakes Peace Centre in Kasese, in the southwest of the country and Cassisi Snow Peaks Rotary Club. Additionally, Nick had been also invited as guest of honour as the installation of the incoming 2024-25 president of Cassisi Snow Peaks Rotary, Afan Abdullah, a prestigious event with 175 guests during which he presented Afan with the Paul Harris Fellowship Award, which Winchester Rotary had secured for him in recognition of the tremendous amount of community work he has done. The evening raised £2,000 for their charity of the year, the construction of a boys' toilet for the local school for disabled children, which is attended by more than 300 pupils. Nick also attended the school to see for himself the work which was desperately needed, as well as three older schools where children are supported with the payment of their school fees by members of the Winchester Rotary, as education in Uganda is not free for anyone. At one school, Nick saw progress in the construction of a classroom which the club had funded. Also on his itinerary was the handing over of the maternal ambulance to the District Health Authority to bring mothers in labour down from the remote hills where there are no roads with the use of a tricycle. There were also a visit from a microfinance project currently being expanded by the provision of seeds to the farmers, which are repaid once the crops have been harvested. And there is a picture of Mick Bell with, I presume it's Afan Abdullah, and some of the students around on the steps of the school.
Road closed for neighbours to enjoy their party. And this is a report on the Hyde Abbey Road summer party. Community spirit was out in force as residents of a Winchester street held a summer party. Hyde Abbey Road was closed throughout Sunday as around 60 people enjoyed the good weather for the beach-themed party. Hursley Butchers provided a hog roast and Hyde Tavern the drinks. There was short tennis, a children's piñata, a dog show and a raffle to raise money for Winchester GOLD, which supports adults with learning difficulties. The dog show was won by Bernie, which is a Bernie Doodle. That's a cross between a Bernese mountain dog and a poodle. And a fiercely competitive tug-of-war was also contested, with houses' odd numbers pitted against even numbers. Vicky Anderson, who has lived in Hyde Abbey Road for 21 years, was one of the organisers, and she said, "We do these events every other year, but there's an aspiration to make them once a year. It's really nice to meet new neighbours, and it's nice for all the kids to be able to play in the road. It's so nice not to have the cars here. We've had the hog roast from the Hursley Butchers, and we've got the Hyde Tavern, which is our local pub. Also short tennis from Osmond Tennis, which are just around the corner, and a raffle in aid of Winchester GOLD. These events have been happening since we moved here. And it's a friendly street anyway, but it's so nice for neighbours who have never met before to spend time together. It's nice to do something positive instead of moaning about parking or potholes." And there's a whole series of photographs accompanying this article. They were extremely lucky. They had lovely weather. Everybody's out there. They're even wearing sunglasses. It was that sunny. And all having a thoroughly good time. And the street, of course, was closed to all traffic.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vinson, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.